So, what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Should a child be able to choose their own gender? This is a topic I took up last week on Trending after former Vice President Biden said that an 8-year-old should be able to do this. Now, today, a little later, joining me will be Walt Heyer. He had a gender reassignment surgery and lived as a so-called woman for 8 years. He said, "At first, I was giddy for the fresh start. But hormones and sex change genital surgery couldn't solve the underlying issues." He'll share his story here on Trending in just a little bit. Don't go away and spread the news. A poll came out recently, and it made the claim that young adults are more likely than older Catholics to accept all of the church's teaching. I thought that was intriguing, and I'll unpack that part of it in a moment here. However, there's another piece of this study that really stood out to me. The survey conducted by Real Clear Opinion Research and EWTN showed that there was actually an increase in confession among the younger Catholics. Here's what's fascinating. Those who frequent the sacrament of confession most are actually young Catholics age 18 to 34. In fact, 56% of them say they go at least one time per year. There's a stark contrast between those age 18 to 34, where we see 56% are going. That's almost 6 out of 10 Catholics age 18 to 34 who are actually going to confession. Well, on the other end of the spectrum, Catholics over the age of 55, just 25% go to confession. So that's 1 out of 4 rather than 6 out of 10. Isn't that interesting? When we're looking at this, I really have to ask the question, why the difference? Perhaps it is that in the face of the current culture that we live in, the fact that someone even chooses to practice their faith actually tells us that if they're choosing to practice it or identify as a Catholic, they're actually trying to live it out. This is what stands out to me in a culture of so-called nones, those N-O-N-E-S who supposedly don't identify with any religion. It's the largest growing category if we were to look at categories in relation to religion. So in reality, the fact that young people are identifying at all as Catholic speaks something to what we see in this study. If they're practicing at all, they're more likely to subscribe to what the church teaches and to actually identify with their Catholic faith. So that same age group, age 18 to 34, 1 out of 4 of them said that they believe everything the church teaches. So we're talking about things even relating to moral issues and impacting how these young Catholic voters will vote. Now, if we look at that in contrast to whether or not those age 55 and up believe everything the church teaches, just 16% say they do. So we're looking at almost a 10% gap in terms of how much people, practicing Catholics, believe all the church teaches. Again, 25% of practicing Catholics in that 18 to 34-year range show more promise in subscribing to all the church teaches. I think that we've seen years of essentially this attitude with regard to, well, I can identify as Catholic, but I can live my life how I wish. And unfortunately, that's something that's more common among older Catholics. We could put it back to catechesis. Some, maybe that's you. You're saying, well, I think it has more to do with life experience. And at the same time, that could be a moment of pride as well. At the same time, we could say that perhaps these young Catholics don't actually know their faith. They're like, oh yeah, I believe everything the Catholic Church teaches, assuming they know what indeed the Church does teach. But again, I kind of am throwing out the fact that they claim they believe everything the Church teaches, and I'm focusing on the fact that they are choosing to go to confession more often than any other age group. Why? I think young Catholics age 18 to 34 are facing this culture, and they recognize, if I'm going to be Catholic, if I'm going to survive, if I'm going to choose to develop my character, my faith, and to truly thrive, I need to have hope in God. I need to be honest with myself in a very morally confused culture, and I hunger for more than what the world's constant yes and affirmation of any type of lifestyle says. I think these three H's are really important. They have hope coming from their faith. They have honesty with themselves. And this is part of the reason why they're going to confession, because they're going, I'm screwing up. I am literally barely treading water. I'm at times drowning in this culture, and I'm hungry. I want more. This is why I often point to St. John Paul II's visit to Poland for the first time after becoming Pope. People said that the young people, no one would show up for the leader of the Catholic Church. Yet people showed up in droves. In fact, over a million. And they chanted in the streets. They couldn't be silenced. We want God. And this is what I see in the fact that more young Catholics who are actually choosing to be Catholic are going to confession. They want more. They need God. They have hope in Him, and they're having to really face the reality of the mistakes they themselves may have already made and are making. And in fact, I'll share with you the story later on this week on Trending, where my guest shares her own experience of her struggle with sexuality for years. How she herself struggled with homosexuality. And sometimes I think we kind of try to undercomplicate it and say, well, someone's either just attracted to girls or just attracted to boys. But we forget that often when sexuality steps out of its proper context, people tend to swing both ways. I shared with you before, many of my friends from high school swung both ways to this day now. It wasn't the case when they were younger, now it is. When we confuse the purpose of sexuality, the creation of new human life, we start to cry out and go, well, what's real? And this is what I think these young Catholics are saying. I want to know what's real. I'm struggling to know what's true. And I'm choosing to try and hope in God and have that hunger and keep it alive in me by going to confession. And so let these numbers inspire you and have hope that those who are choosing to practice their Catholic faith, they want it. And we need to step up and continue to direct them with the proper examples, love, and resources necessary, which is why I ask you all the time, join me in my mission of Trending here. This show, we are focusing on bringing up the toughest moral issues in our culture because we want you to understand and see that we have to go out into the deep where people are at and answer those tough questions that make us uncomfortable. Go into those murky waters where people are truly losing themselves out of a false sense of compassion. Which in fact brings me to the topic of the day. We hear a lot about identifying as transgender and even letting kids go so far as to receive irreversible hormone replacement therapy and surgery to reconfigure their body parts. But not a lot of people are willing to say the truth about this. Everyone says they want to be compassionate and inclusive. They're all for equality and coexisting. But when you tell the truth about this, no one says the fact that sex change procedures aren't effective. There's copious research on this. In fact, more than 40% increase in attempted suicide after the operation occurs. And if we're just to talk about young children, who are suffering from gender dysphoric concerns, many of those, if they're left without being coaxed into LGBTQ community, tend to choose to align with their biological gender. That's 9 out of 10 kids who are confused about their sexuality. My guest today is Walt Heyer. Now, Walt Heyer, in his 30s, became Laura Jensen. And after having undergone full so-called gender reassignment surgery, he lived as a so-called woman for 8 years. Yet, he's the founder of the website and author of numerous books titled SexChangeRegret.com. Walt, thank you for joining me today, and I would love it if you could start by sharing with what led you to this 30-year-old identity as Laura Jensen.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on. At age 4, who was cross-dressed by an adult, happened to be my grandmother, who made a purple chiffon dress for me and told me how cute I was. And as a 4-year-old, I can tell you, you have no idea what the consequences are going to be of someone suggesting, encouraging, or dressing you up in the opposite gender. But what we should all take away from this today, if you don't hear anything else, if you don't remember and encouraging him in the way of a different gender, such as a female, it is child abuse. It is psychological child abuse. It's emotional child abuse. And sometimes it becomes sexual child abuse because of changing this gender. So in my case, where I wore the purple dress as a 4-year-old, and eventually my uncle, when he thought it was
funny. Ooh, I think we're losing you, Walt, there. We're going to reconnect to that connection real quick to make sure it's really strong, because we're having some glitches here. I want to really be able to hear all of your story, because this is so important. Sometimes we don't realize the impact that things adults do and how it can actually harm a child's sexuality moving forward. And so this is where I even think of the story of Daniel Mattson. He wrote the book, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay. The subtitle has something to do about reclaiming my sexuality. And you want to know his first exposure to confusion about his sexual identity and orientation? It had to do with the fact that his mother always wanted a little girl, and so she dressed him up as a little girl and give him the most affirmation when he was dressed as a little girl. This created a huge sentiment of psychological confusion for him. As we continue to reconnect with Walt Heyer to really strengthen the connection so that you can hear his story, I really want to encourage you to check out Daniel Mattson's book as well, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, because testimonies such as Walt Heyer's from SexChangeRegret.com or Daniel Mattson of Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, and my guest coming up later at the end of the week who struggled with same-sex attraction with women, all share this narrative that their sexuality, their attraction, their desire, their temptation alone does not define them. And the world wants to tell us this. And so we've reconnected with Walt Heyer, getting that strong connection. Walt, you were just sharing how your first exposure to this transgender confusion started when you were 4. Mm-hmm. You were dressed in a chiffon dress by one of your aunts. And then that really started to create that confusion. Did it happen multiple times? And then what happened with your uncle?
Yeah. Actually, it was my grandmother, and it happened over a 2.5-year period of time where she was cross-dressing me. And then as I became 7 or 8 years old, and it became known in the family that I, you know, here's this little boy wearing a purple dress at grandma's. And so my uncle decided that I was fair game to be sexually abused. So I think what's interesting here that the listeners need to understand is, and I say that this is a child abuse, because without that purple dress, I never would have been sexually abused by my uncle. It was just because my grandmother chose to put me in a purple dress because she thought I looked cute, and I certainly didn't object. I don't think any young 4-year-old boy is going to object to it, maybe in a few cases, but most kids just kind of go along with grandma and do what she's asking you to do. It seemed fun. It seemed very benign, but it's very harmful. It's psychologically harmful. And so these things, here I am, I'm speaking to you now 76 years later, and I'm still talking about it. That's how much harm that purple dress did, because I'm 80 years old. And so that was four, I was 4 years old. So I'm still talking about what grandma did. And that's what people need to understand. We should be affirming our young boys as young boys. We should be telling them how handsome they are, how wonderful they are, how intelligent they are. We should not be telling them that they can choose a gender, because they can't. Their gender is fixed at conception. It is innate. It is unchangeable. You actually cannot change someone's gender with hormones and surgery. The only thing you can do is feminize a young boy or masculinize a girl, but you can't actually change their gender. This idea that people are having gender changes is absolutely false. We're just allowing them to dress differently and identify differently, but the fact of the matter is they haven't really changed. And this is really when you get down to it, and I've worked with literally thousands of people, and when you boil it down to the harm that's done, you realize that it's absolutely insane to do this to young people. I don't even know how it's gotten so popular. I don't understand how a parent can think that it's benign and it's okay to do. We should really be railing against this. We should not allow doctors to be subjecting our children to hormone blockers. We should not be allowing our young children at 12 or 13 years old to have their breasts removed and to identify as this is a trend. This is just something going on that society has told them they can do. From TV, we have these people identifying in a different gender on TV shows. We are now teaching this in schools. I tell parents, you know, frankly, if I had a child today, and I wouldn't put them in public schools. This place, they are an indoctrination center for the LGBT.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It coaxes them into the LGBTQ community, which is absolutely terrifying. Let's unpack. And if you're just joining us, my guest today is Walt Heyer. That's Heyer, H-E-Y-E-R. You can find him at waltheyer.com. We'll post the links right now on my Twitter page as well, so that you can learn more about him, his work, and his ministry to people who have gone through with sex changes. And they have great regrets. Now let's unpack more of your story, Walt. Before transitioning, you actually started to kind of try and figure, you had been married, had a couple children, you were starting to question, well, what's really going on? And you went to an expert on transgender treatment at the time. What was his scope of care, and did it help you?
Well, this individual's name is Paul Walker, and he was the world leading expert. In fact, he was the one who drafted the Harry Benjamin International Standards of Care for the Treatment and Diagnosis of Gender Dysphoria or Gender Identity Disorder. And that today is still the standard that is, it's been revised a few times, but my therapist was actually the guy that developed the standards of care that are in existence today. And in my case, and in many cases, he got it wrong, because we're treating people with hormones and surgery that don't need either. And the fact of the matter is they can't change them. So when I went to him and told him my story, he quickly diagnosed me with gender dysphoria and said, well, what you need is hormone therapy and gender reassignment surgery. But there was no, this was in 1981 when I went to him. So there was no opposing voices. There was nobody out there. There was no internet. And that's why I'm here today. I want people to go to the website, sexchangeregret.com. I want people to read my book, Trans Life Survivors and Paper Genders. These are important books that there isn't anybody who is looking at this or dealing with this issue should not read those two books. If you only read two books in your life, read Paper Genders and Trans Life Survivors. And so this is significant. If we're going to save this generation from this absolute destruction of their identity, we're in a real crisis. The schools have become nothing but LGBT centers for the change of genders.
Yeah, it's become almost a recruiting ground for pedophilia. It's absolutely frightening. And we're going to post links to those two books that you just mentioned as well. So you end up going through with a sex change. This is one of, at the time, the pioneers of kind of some of the standards of care for so-called transgender identity. What did the sex change do? Did you find that happiness that you sought? What was the aftermath of the so-called sex change?
Yeah, I think there was a period of euphoria. You think, okay, I think you're kind of waiting for it to fix you. You know, you're going, okay, I've done it now. They're telling me this is the answer. And I think so. There's definitely an element where you're buying into the treatment, because nobody's going to come out of it and say, wow, this didn't do anything and this was wrong, because it's such a big mistake. That you can't get there. It took me 8 years to get there. And so I think there was a definite period of euphoria. But as I began to work through this and identify as Laura, I had good jobs. I worked for the Postal Service. I worked for FDIC in the banking. I had a very nice mahogany row job. So I wasn't, you know, laying in the gutters as Laura. I was working and employed by the federal government. But the truth is, the surgery can't change it. I found out, and the surgeon and Dr. Walker both had to appear in court for me when I was petitioning to have my birth certificate reversed back to Walt. And they testified in a letter to court that hormones and surgery has never changed anyone's gender. And that's a matter of Superior Court document. They wrote and said, it doesn't change you. It doesn't change anything from male to female. The best that it can accomplish is to neuter you because they're working on your genitals. But everything else remains male. They talk about the inner morphology, which is what really makes you who you are, your inner morphology. People don't talk about that. That is unchangeable.
Amen. Amen. That's Walt Heyer. You can find him at waltheyer.com. That's H-E-Y-E-R. We post links on social media. We're going to come back to discuss, how did Walt take back his life after the sex change? And where was the healing? We'll be right back.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
My guest today, Walt Heyer, he lived as a so-called woman for 8 years after going through a sex change and hormone replacement therapy. We're going to dive now into, Walt, how did you take back your own life after that sex change?
Yeah. You know, one of the things I want to talk about before we get to that, it's so important. There's a movie that's just come out this month, made for the Catholic Church, made for the Catholic audience on EWTN. And it's called Wolf in Sheep's Clothing 2, The Gender Agenda. And this is by Arcadia Films, Richard Payne. Everybody should see this. My testimony is in there. I'm the only one in the movie that talks about this. And so it's very important that people have that resource. It is an excellent film done for the Catholic Church, Wolf in Sheep's Clothing 2, The Gender Agenda. But I came to restoring my life through the power and grace of Jesus Christ in prayer, and by a lot of really wonderful people surrounding me and working with me so that I could begin to understand that the surgeons, all they did was mutilate me. They didn't change me. They were doing more to destroy my life than they were to improve the quality of my life. I ended up homeless and living in a park, totally broke. And so through many years of struggling, crawling back, I had probably 100 different jobs, from making muffins in a coffee shop to just numerous things, crawling my way back, praying, and finally coming into relationship with Christ. And through that prayer, I was redeemed and restored. And I don't want to give away that part. It's in my book, a transgender's faith. It's a dramatic event that happened in my life where the Lord came and redeemed and restored me in a moment to allow me the privilege of serving and serving the world. Actually, my ministry goes to 180 countries around the world. We reach about 300 million people a year through media, TV. I've done over a dozen documentary films that in Russia, Canada, Australia, and other places around the world, and here now in the United States with that EWTN Wolf in Sheep's Clothing 2, The Gender Agenda.
Praise God. That's Walt Heyer joining us here on Irrelevant Radio. And isn't it such an incredible testament that God does not define us according to our sin? God does not define us according to our brokenness. We are children of God with his unconditional love. In the face of anything we have done, any confusion we have had in our past, he is always there to pick us back up. Walt, one of my questions here is when you were transitioning back after living as a woman for those 8 years and having gone through the sex change, were there people in your life who were helping to draw you out of that false identity?
Not really. You know, people were so afraid to encourage me back because everyone was afraid that I was going to collapse and go back to being Laura. So nobody wanted to be in that spot where they encouraged me to do something that was actually causing me harm. I was really working hand in hand with the Lord Jesus Christ. The Holy Spirit had really touched me. I can tell you that he kept tapping me on the shoulder and guiding every step of the way. I had to overcome a lot of people's fear about me detransitioning, and that was 30 years ago now. And so this has been such a wonderful ride to be able to work through this. And now I work with people literally every day who themselves came through this and regretted having done it and are now detransitioning. The regretters continue to grow. The more surgeries and things that they perform, the more people regret it. And unfortunately, the attempted suicide rate, as you mentioned, is somewhere over 40%. Unfortunately, about 18% of this group will actually die from suicide, according to a study that was done in Sweden.
Wow, so one out of five people who go through with a sex change end up accomplishing that suicide, ending their life. And that is not something you are hearing in the mainstream media. That is not what people are talking about when someone such as former Vice President Joe Biden says that an 8-year-old child should be able to choose their own gender, or when Planned Parenthood now, if you didn't know this, Planned Parenthood will actually give hormone replacement therapy to teenagers in the state of Oregon, and others are to come. This is terrifying, and we're not talking about the long-term medical and mental health risks. So, Walter, right, you actually have talked often about people who experience gender dysphoria suffer from multiple comorbid disorders. What are those, and how did this play into your experience?
Yeah, many of the young people don't even have gender dysphoria. They're being misdiagnosed and given the idea they have gender dysphoria and encouraged to change and given the diagnosis falsely. Mr. Biden is incorrect. Kids cannot choose their gender. It's fixed. We shouldn't even be using the term they can choose their gender because they can't. I mean, this is where the fallacy of using such terminology is. I tell little Johnny, you can't change your gender. You can't choose your gender. You can choose to dress like a girl, but you can't change your gender. That's the reality. So it's so important for us to understand the comorbidities that go along with this. Oftentimes are dissociative disorders or bipolar disorder or even body dysmorphia. They become to the point where they don't like their body. And when we hear somebody talk about they don't like their body, that's body dysmorphia. If they're cutting themselves or causing them self-harm. And the fact of the matter is changing genders and engaging in surgery on your body is self-harm. And people who are harming themselves have psychological problems that need to be addressed. They don't need to be in front of a surgeon. They need to be in front of a psychotherapist. And they need to have a relationship with Jesus Christ if they're going to overcome these things.
Well, it's as if transgenderism has become the new eating disorder and rejection of the body. And we're seeing teenagers and young college girls who are in groups with their girlfriends all of a sudden identifying as transgender. And this has to do with this rejection and identity crisis and discomfort with their body, not that they actually want to be boys or vice versa.
Well, that's right. I think actually there's much more to do with them wanting to join a group and act as though they're rejecting their body. This is what I call a social contagion disease. They don't have gender dysphoria. They really don't want to be boys. I had a case where I asked the mother to talk to the girl, and I won't go into the great detail, but the mother talked to the girl, and the girl says, you know, I really don't want to be a boy. I was just kind of going along with this. I don't want to use the binder. And the mom and the girl had this wonderful conversation on the couch, and the girl just dismissed it. She was 14 years old. She just really wanted to connect with her mother. She wanted to identify with her mother in a way that made her feel good about being a female. And she had not done that before. And this intimate moment allowed her to connect with her mother and realize that being a female was something very special and very intimate. And in that moment, she totally rejected her friends and the idea of joining this group and identifying as a male. So the kids are fragile. Kids like to join groups and be a part of a group, but they really don't have gender dysphoria. They don't have gender confusion. They just want to be a part of what other kids are doing. And that's why the studies show that 90% of them will grow out of it by adulthood, because they're being put in these environments in school that allows them the opportunity to identify as somebody else. It's nonsense. This stuff shouldn't be in our schools. I am absolutely appalled by the schools allowing this to take place. It's really, really harmful. It's breaking up families, and it's destroying our young population, and it should be stopped.
That's Walt Heyer. You're listening to him here on Relevant Radio. You're listening to Trending with Timmery. What you just said about the necessity of girls in their connection relationship with their mothers, and the same we could say for boys, we see in so much of psychology today that specifically millennials and Gen X are the unaffirmed generation. They're so hungry for affirmation from parents, from role models, from people in their peer groups even, and they're not receiving it. And this is leaving a gaping wound in the culture. And these are the same people that then become parents, and they weren't affirmed, and there are these insecurities, and this cycle continues to flow. And
that's right.
Well, I think about this and what you're saying. The very first thing God did when he created everything is he looked around and said that it was good. But when he looked at the human person, he said, you are very good. When he looked at his son, Jesus Christ, in the Gospels, God comes down upon him at his baptism and at the transfiguration. And God again says, this is my beloved son with whom I'm well pleased. God shows how important it is as a parent and as an adult and a mentor to show affirmation to other people. I think that this is a game-changing piece in this whole conversation.
Yeah. I want to make sure that people hear this. I was fractured at the moment my grandmother put me in that purple dress. And when we put a young boy in a dress and affirm them as a female, we are fracturing them. We're damaging them. I should have been affirmed as a little boy. I should have been told how handsome and wonderful I was as a little boy. That did not happen with my grandmother. She fractured me, she damaged me, and it harmed me, and I'm still talking about it 76 years later.
Well, it reminds me that it is never too late to affirm your children. Take back your kids, parents, moms, dads. Step up, even if it's uncomfortable. Call them, text them today. You know, tell them you love them physically. Affirm them with that hug and that kiss. Bless them. This is so important. And this brings me to this question. While you struggled with gender dysphoria starting at age 4, this is where your story begins. Given your experience, what do you think of parents, politicians, and schools encouraging young children into sex changes and the transgender lifestyle?
Well, we got to remember, this is now a political tool. It has nothing to do with gender dysphoria because most of the people don't have gender dysphoria. They've been psychologically and emotionally abused by an adult. So what we're dealing with is a political activist group. That's all the LGBT is. It's a political sexual activist group. And they really have an agenda, and it's to encourage people to change genders. And unfortunately, it's doing a great deal of damage. It's ruining families. It's tearing families apart. And if we destroy the foundation of man and woman in marriage in the church, we can destroy the entire foundation of the church. That's why it's so important to not buy into this idea that women can become men or men can become women. Because factually, it's not true. It's biologically not possible. It's not hormonally possible. It's not science. It's just not possible to make a man into a woman or a woman into a man. So this is, I think, some people have the idea that they can destroy the church by virtue of destroying male and female, because it is the foundation of the family. It's the foundation of the church that Jesus Christ wants. We are supposed to be male and female and develop children and bring them up in a life that honors and glorifies the Lord Jesus Christ. We're not honoring and glorifying Jesus Christ when we're asking our children or telling or encouraging our children to change genders and to go to school that way. Or are we honoring and glorifying Jesus Christ when we're affirming what God made as a boy into a female gender? That is really, really blasphemy.
That's Walt Heyer. You can find him at waltheyer.com. That's H-E-Y-E-R. He has his ministry, Sex Change Regret, which you can link to from there. We're posting links now on social media. This is an incredible ministry, helping people to leave that identity that public schools, that adults are coaxing young children and adults into, that is not helping to solve the underlying health and psychological concerns and the need ultimately to be loved. Again, check out Walt Heyer at waltheyer.com, his ministry, Sex Change Regret. And remember, parents, you have spiritual authority over your children at all ages. Yes, they may be 18, they may be an adult, but blessing your children, guiding them spiritually, praying for them is so important. Never forget, never give up on them, no matter where they may be living. I'll be right back to share with you, how did we get here, and how does this whole transgender issue also relate to the issue of abortion as well? We'll be right back.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It's our responsibility as Catholics, yours and mine, to be involved in the culture and the governance of our nation and communities. Our church, family, and the most vulnerable members of society depend upon it. Father Rocky's new ebook, Vote Your Conscience, will help you learn how to reform your conscience around truth, beauty, goodness, and Catholic teaching, and to use your well-formed conscience in all areas of your life to make moral choices in voting, raising your family, and evangelizing those around you. Pick up Father's free ebook. All you have to do is head over to relevantradio.com/vote or sign up on the Relevant Radio app today. Be sure to vote. It's so important, and it's important that we're prepared when the time comes. And if you're like me at all, voting takes some time. It takes researching all of those local little races, all of the propositions. You can't just show up on voting day and think that you're going to be prepared to answer each of these important questions. And so I really want to encourage you to do your research. This is part of the reason why I've always loved those absentee ballots. However, there's a lot of confusion now, state of California and many other states, and voter fraud, and is my ballot ending up in a creek? You want to be careful with how you go about it, but take the time to properly vote and properly research your candidates. It's so important, especially in light of the conversation we just had with Walt Heyer from Sex Change Regret, sharing his story of having lived as a woman for 8 years. He went through with a sex change. Why are we doing this to little kids? Why are we allowing politicians to say that it's okay if an 8-year-old chooses their gender? Well, how did we get here? I think that that's a better question that we have to ask. How did we get to this point in 2020 where there is so much confusion? And I really do think, I know it relates to this issue of who we are as people and how we continue to chip away at our identity. I was just reading the story about the huge vote just a number of days ago in Poland, that a Poland came out with this abortion ruling that has led to some protests across the country. Now, this ruling that came out last week has banned an additional set of abortions that were taking place. Now, if you don't know this already, Poland had the most restrictive laws on abortion in the European Union. In fact, they have fewer than 2,000 legal abortions that occur each year. That's incredible. We have well over 3,000 a day here in the United States. And our numbers aren't even properly documented. That doesn't even include RU486 chemical abortions, which you could supposedly use up to about 8 or 10 weeks. But even many Planned Parenthood and other abortion facilities actually give these to women as late as 16 weeks. I've worked with these women in crisis pregnancy. When they've been given harmful chemical abortions at stages in pregnancy, they should never, ever have taken those harmful chemical abortion pills. And so how does this all relate? I'm looking at the people in Poland right now who are protesting the fact that for those people, right now the law in Poland, to just kind of update you here, the only cases where abortion is allowed are in cases of rape, incest, and where the mother's health is at risk. Still wrong, but they have the most restrictive abortion law, which has saved countless lives. Now, with that, they've now changed their abortion law a little bit more to make sure that there was not a targeting of the child in the womb, where if there was some diagnosis of something possibly being wrong with the baby in utero, that you couldn't go through with an abortion. This is important as we've seen that children with Down syndrome are being obliterated worldwide. Some countries even tout the fact that they no longer have children with Down syndrome who are born, because they've aborted all of them. Today, even in the United States, to have a diagnosis of Downs is a death sentence. It's very rare if those children come out of the womb. Yet I can tell you again, having worked in the crisis pregnancy centers, having sidewalk counseled in front of the abortion clinic, I have seen countless times where there is a diagnosis for the child in utero, all that screening of the baby. And you know what? There have been times where these babies have been screened and the parents are told that this baby wouldn't even make it through the whole pregnancy. The child might live hours. The child will have Down syndrome. And a lot of those babies are born perfectly healthy. Perfectly healthy. In fact, I remember when my sister was going recently for some of those scans and tests that are usually done to screen the baby. And she was asking her midwife, well, why would I do this test? And the midwife looked at her and said, to be honest, usually people want these specific tests because they're determining whether or not they're going to continue on with the pregnancy. My sister, being very pro-life, was horrified and immediately said, no, thank you. I'll pass on the test. And this is important because many moms are terrified. Terrified by the fact that their child is subject to all of these testings. They go, well, what if my child has this? What if my child has that? And then they're faced with the offer or even the thought, because it's legal, that abortion could be an option. So I asked earlier, how do we get to this transgender movement and letting so-called 8-year-olds choose their sex and start lifelong damaging hormone replacement therapy or sex changes to manipulate their body parts? We have to really think about this from the big picture. We saw back into the 60s something fundamentally change in the United States regarding the human person. We suddenly saw that there was this adoption of hormonal contraception. We saw court cases such as Griswold versus Connecticut, where suddenly hormonal contraception was decriminalized. Well, what did that do? That took babies out of sex. What happens when we take sex out of babies out of sex? It allows us to take sex out of marriage. Well, what happened not long after that decriminalizing of hormonal contraception? It started to be used more commonly. Next thing you know, we saw no-fault divorce come onto the national landscape, starting with California and sweeping across the United States. Because you see, there was cheating that was easily done because there was no longer the fear at the same level of a baby coming about from an extramarital affair. And so we now begin to continue to break down the institution of marriage, the sanctity of it, the fidelity of it. Seeing that one spouse could walk out on the other without the other even having a say in it. Then we saw that contraception wasn't enough. It was being used so much, yet often not used correctly. It all isn't always effective, so we needed a fail-safe for contraception. We needed an abortion. We needed abortion, which hit in the early 70s with Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton. These court cases, these decisions in the United States to say that babies, sex, marriage all don't go together created a tremendous confusion about the human person. It's no surprise that right after this whole being freed of your bonds of fertility with second wave feminism, that third wave feminism had to do with absolute equality, claiming that there are no differences between men and women. And therefore, the third wave feminists took up the banner of the LGBTQ movement because there's no difference between men and women. We had neutered women with contraception, and now we're neutering men and women today with hormone replacement therapy. It's all connected. This is why we saw in 2016 Obergefell versus Hodges. Because now we had, if we were going to stand by the fact that we could take babies out of sex, sex outside of marriage isn't necessary, men and women are the same and interchangeable, well then anyone can marry anyone. You can have as many partners as you want. This is what happens when we fail to affirm what is feminine and what is masculine. Literally written into our entire body. Body and soul are these differences between femininity and masculinity. We see this in the ability of the muscles and what they can endure, how they can push and have power within them, different between men and women. The ability to endure things in quick, heavy push, lifting, and brute force. Something fundamentally different about men and women in the way they exercise and they move. The very structure of their bodies. We see neuroscientists are being called neurosexists. Why? Because on the level of brain mapping, there are differences between men and women. In fact, if we were to look at even simple, very simple sleeping medications, some of these sleeping medications, there have been problems with them because guess what? When you give it to a man versus a woman, not based on weight, not based on height, but actually based on biological sex, men and women respond differently to various medications on the level of their brain. Did you know that? Neuroscientists are being called neurosexists for this. So science affirms it. The social sciences, psychology affirms it. Why is it that people are so terrified to admit that there are differences between men and women? We had a call coming from Santa Ana that I didn't have the opportunity to take, but this touches on exactly this. How is it that psychiatrists can recommend a sex change for a child? Well, psychiatrists, just like you and I in today's culture, are terrified of speaking up against this gender confusion in this ideology in the culture because we're scared of being told that we're sexist. I was called racist last week by someone for saying there are differences between men and women and that marriage is between one man and one woman. I don't know how that's racist, but okay. You know, I look at it and we're so scared of being called something or being threatened or hurting someone's feelings. We need to acknowledge the fact that when we create confusion about sexuality, about new human life, that we fundamentally impact who a person is and what they seek after. This is why tomorrow on Trending, we're going to talk about femininity and masculinity, that innate desire to be a mother, and how we can build up the mental and spiritual health of Men. We'll be right back tomorrow.